and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am Becky Friedman hosting today, and with me I've got Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I am quite excellent, thank you.
And Paul Mops back in the studio. How are you, Paul?
Hello, I'm just wonderful, thank you.
It's great to have you. You know what? This week, happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day.
Thank you.
And yes, thank you to Paul for his veteran service. What do you guys do during Veterans Day?
I don't actually do much. I'm embarrassed to say I don't. There's very little military history in my family. No one ever really joined the military, and so we never really spent a lot of time paying attention.
We've got in it's Free State Parks Day here in Washington, I believe, right?
Yes, it is.
Some of us are going to, I think, not one of our state parks, but one of our national parks, we're going to go up hiking, right?
Yes.
So, I you know what, Dave? I got to admit, it's kind of surprising. I figure that most American kids with American grandparents, or at least the grandparents of some veterans, but yeah. So, Paul, what do you like to do during Veterans Day?
Veterans Day, I usually stay home.
You don't cash in on the little discounts or anything?
I don't do anything.
You don't wear the red, white, and blue tie, nothing?
Never have.
Certainly not on that day, not about to start.
No, I reflect a lot, and I don't just go out.
Yeah.
It has no interest to me.
Stay in the cabins and be yourself. Yeah. Well, if you'd like to call in to Ask an Atheist, you call in at 844-SKEPTICS. That's 844-753-7842. And let's continue with this military theme today. You know what? We have an Atheist in Foxhole monument that's been unveiled. The Freedom from Religion Foundation has unveiled at its Madison, Wisconsin headquarters a nearly 5,000-pound granite monument dedicated to atheists in foxholes. That's a twist on the common aphorism about war and danger turning atheists into believers. Engraved text states that the display is presented with the hope that in the future, humankind may learn to avoid all war. This is the second such monument, the first being installed in Alabama, overseen by the Alabama Freethought Society. So what do you guys think of that?
That's pretty cool.
I think it's wonderful.
Just having a really nice, you know, I also heard that this granite is actually the same granite that Mount Rushmore was carved into, that black granite.
Oh, wow. Now, one of the things I really find fascinating, I think is worth mentioning about this story, is that you'll notice that they put up a monument to atheist veterans specifically, so they put it up on private property. They didn't try and put it up in a public park or in front of a Capitol building or anything like that. Like, this is a private monument, so it's on non-government land.
At the headquarters of Freedom from Religion Foundation. I mean, they fight on behalf of separation of church and state, on behalf of service members and military folks and veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be okay, though, if it were on a public sort of area? I mean, it is a memorial to a certain segment of our veteran population.
I don't think it would be.
I don't either.
Yeah, I think if you can't have a monument to veterans that has a religious symbol across a Star of David, anything like that, you can't have this either, because that would be government endorsement of non-religion.
What if it's side by side other ones?
I would not mind that. If it's inclusive, what's the problem?
Yeah, if it's a part of a greater sort of display, but I'd really rather not have the display. There's a great monument. There's a different story about a monument that was on public land with a cross on it that is being moved to private property and is being replaced by, it's just the new monument is a statue that's just boots, an M16, and a helmet on top. And it's a very solemn and very touching monument without any religious context whatsoever. It's just four of the veterans themselves. And that's, I think, is the best way to go.
Absolutely. If you take the cemeteries, the military cemeteries, all your headstones are going to have a marker of what that person's religion was. And finally, they're inclusive of the A for the atheist and the Wiccan and everything. So you have it all on display in the cemeteries anyway. And they're all side by side. It's everything is inclusive. So
kind of a funny kind of thing to look at happily, someone's memorial or remembrance. But, you know, it's I think that we're moving towards something that's more inclusive. And that's something I definitely like to see.
Right.
So in another world of happy news, having nothing to do with remembrance or the passing of anyone. We've got one of the three couples that sued County Clerk Kim Davis for refusing them a marriage license finally held a wedding ceremony. April Miller and Karen Roberts have been together for 11 years. They have a daughter. And the couple finally acquired a license after Davis was sent to jail for contempt of court and held a hurried private ceremony to make sure they got their license back to the court before Davis returned to work. The couple finally held a larger ceremony with friends and family with the instruction that no one was to mention the name Kim Davis.
This is really great news. I mean, I'm just really happy to hear this. And it's just like, you know, I think Jeremy in the pre-show was saying something about how Kim Davis likes to advertise her losses as wins.
As if they were victories.
Yes. And this is another one. It's like, this is the real victory. This is a couple who love each other, who've been together for a long time, who have a daughter finally getting public recognition of their relationship. That's the victory.
I think the victory here is also, you know what, if you cause a little bit of a stink on the side of right, then you can make tremendous change.
You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
These were three couples that had standing to sue, but it's changed the face of what it means to seek a marriage license across the United States, which is just incredible.
Yep.
Going a little bit outside the United States, can we go to Ireland for a minute here?
Well, before we go to Ireland, I do want to mention that not only is it changing in a legal sense, I think that you're seeing a major shift after the Kim Davis story of public perception of, you know, I don't think that the sympathies of most Americans are on the side of the evangelicals saying, is my religious freedom to stop these people from getting married? I think that, you know, this stance in particular has damaged that side a lot, and I think that's another victory.
I think it's absolutely a victory. So, you know, that public perception has reached all the way to Ireland, or has fomented in Ireland equally. A bill establishing marriage equality in Ireland was finally signed into law this week. Ireland became the first nation to approve marriage equality by popular vote when it passed a referendum on same-sex marriage by 60% last May. The signature of the presidential commission is the final step to enacting the law, and a justice minister said that same-sex couples can begin marrying later this month. Some argue that the marriage equality bill signals a major weakening of the church's influence on the traditionally Catholic nation.
Congratulations, Ireland.
Incredible.
That's super exciting. It's a shame we don't have Ireland's national anthem ready.
Oh, queued up? No, not at this time. So, you know, Washington State here was one of the first states along with two or three others to, by popular vote, approve marriage equality. But
that's because we're cool.
I think Ireland is the first country.
Yeah, they're the first nation to pass it by popular vote instead of judicial or just straight, I think.
Popular vote? I mean,
popular vote instead of legislative vote.
Uh-huh. Right?
So, you know, it's interesting. It's well done to them.
And pretty incredible in a country where the majority of people at least on their rosters are affiliated with the Catholic Church. But even that, we see people saying, no, actually, don't count me as Catholic just because I was born and you know, christened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the history in Ireland and between Ireland and the Catholic Church is very long. And it's nice to see the sort of chains of Catholicism finally loosening from that country.
Yes.
Definitely is. You know, we've got an email from Thomas from the internet, and he writes in, he says, hi, I was curious about the atheist people's view on what happens after death. Do you believe in an afterlife? And Thomas says, I'm not in any religion. Rather, I believe in walking my own path and creating my own personal beliefs, so I'm not one to judge. Just curious about others' views and if they relate to that of my own. Paul, what do you got on this one?
Myself, I think you go to wherever you were before you were ever born.
And where was that? Do we have knowledge of that?
Who knows? I don't have any idea, and I don't think anybody else does either. That's my personal belief. Our energy goes back in the ground.
As far as any idea of a soul or any, you know, part of our consciousness continuing after death, I see no reason to believe that is true, but I did have an idea of something, you know, the religious people love to bring up the second law of thermodynamics when they're arguing about, you know, evolution couldn't exist because they don't understand how the laws of thermodynamics work. But one of the things that we learn from the laws of thermodynamics is that matter and energy cannot be created or destroyed. It only changes form, which means that everything we are made up of existed at the moment of the Big Bang. and everything we are made up of will continue to exist until the heat death of the universe. And so we are a part of the universe and will always be a part of the universe. What we are now is just one shape that the universe takes.
It's a very beautiful sort of image on a topic that many people associate with fear and sadness. For me, the afterlife is the thing that I can be truly most agnostic about. I think it was the very first thing that I became agnostic about when I was about 11. And my dad said, you know, who knows what happens when, you know, when you die, you could go to heaven and see a big fat Buddha wearing a yarmulke at a set of pearly gates. Nobody knows. So special cues to dad for teaching that. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-7842. And when we come back, we're going to be hearing about some military and veterans issues.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
Hard to see. My God, the rain is coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEX Radio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Hi, welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844 Skeptic. We are very pleased this segment to be hearing from Blake Page. After his much publicized resignation from West Point in protest of religious encroachment into the military, Blake Page has continued to contribute to the secular movement in his role as a volunteer with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. How are you, Blake?
I'm doing good.
So great to have you on for this segment. You know, how did you originally get involved in the Military Religious Freedom Foundation?
My initial involvement with the MRSF was actually as a client. It was the summer between my junior and senior year at West Point when I first got in touch with Mikey Weinstein, the president and founder of the MRSF, after I had some issues during summer training. It was relatively small compared to some other things that, you know, I observed or heard about in the military, but basically it was just... religious cadets were being given opportunities to, you know, spend time with one another socially and relax and basically have time off from training to go participate in religious events, whereas anyone who was not interested in participating in religious events was not given that reprieve from training, and I didn't think that that was fair. I found someone online who recommended that I get in touch with Mikey directly, and from then on, we stayed in touch, and eventually after I resigned from West Point, I became... much more active with the MRSF, ultimately becoming Mikey's special assistant and the director of U.S. Army Affairs now.
Mm-hmm. So West Point, this is kind of a key story about you. you ended up leaving West Point just shy of graduating and facing possibly paying up to $250,000 towards the cost of your education. How has that resolved?
Well, it took quite a while to get that resolved, actually. I think it dropped out of the media fairly shortly after I resigned, but they continued to pursue recoupment, which is basically asking to pay back the cost of the education there.
Mm-hmm.
The commandant recommended that I didn't pay recoupment, but after that, it was appealed or went to a higher level. The superintendent then recommended no recoupment. Then it went to another level, and a special investigator was appointed to determine whether or not I should pay it. They recommended the same. And then finally, somebody in the Pentagon said, you know what, we're going to make him pay it anyway. And that was the final say through normal channels. But I went through an organization called the Military Board of Corrections for Military Records. And they were able to get it resolved in my favor. So now I do not owe the recoupment, the $200,000+ that would have otherwise had to be paid.
That's good to hear.
We're glad to hear that you're keeping up within the sort of secular activism within the military. And it seems like that you definitely have found that niche for yourself. You know, a few weeks ago on air, we discussed the case of Air Force dental technician Deborah Schoenfeld, who was fired after her Christian coworkers had harassed her for yoga and practicing Wicca. Can you tell us how you're assisting with that case?
Yeah, actually, that's our biggest case right now that I'm involved in anyways. We just recently, I'm not sure if you've seen, it was put out on Military Times just yesterday or the day before. The EEO office has actually dismissed her claims, and they did not investigate in any way whatsoever. Their reason for dismissing her claims had nothing to do with the merits of it. And this is kind of mind-blowing to me personally. The claim that was made by the EEO investigating team was that they could not pursue her claims because her superiors were not Air Force employees.
So this is the U.S. Air Force Equal Employment Opportunity Office? That's what that EEO stands for?
Yes. Yeah, the 11-point Equal Employment Opportunity Office. But what's, you know, it's mind-numbing here. I can't understand their logic, their argumentation. They say that her Air Force supervisor was not an Air Force employee. She was working in an Air Force dental clinic, and she was an Air Force contractor, but somehow they've dismissed it, claiming that the Air Force shouldn't be involved here.
Hmm.
So that's where it stands right now. We are trying to find representation to get it into court, and that would be our next step.
And so there's no other sort of place you can go besides the courts? This is going to have to be settled by a judge?
Yes. So before going into court, we have to exhaust all administrative remedies. And in this case, it would be first going through her chain of command, which obviously failed since they were the ones who were causing the issues for her.
Mm-hmm.
Next step would be to go through EEO. And as of a few days ago, they've refused to investigate. And then the other administrative remedy would be the Inspector General's office. But they have also declined, saying that it wasn't under their purview, something they wouldn't even consider taking. So now all administrative remedies have been exhausted, so it is possible for this to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem like, you know, if the Air Force EEO office will, you know, be so hands-off, then you would go through something that would be civilian. But I could imagine that something like a Human Rights Commission at the state level or under, you know, any of the Federal Rights Act where you can't be discriminated against based on creed, they might be apt to say, hey, this isn't our purview because it happened on an Air Force base.
Yeah, I'm not sure about any civilian organizations. I deal with MRF just with the military, so that would be outside of the scope of things that I have any sort of expertise on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of interesting because this particular client, Deborah Schoenfeld, is being harassed based on her particular beliefs or spiritual beliefs. But you know, a lot of times within the free thought community or secular activists, we sort of think of atheists being discriminated against. But you don't just deal with atheists or non-believers being discriminated against.
Right. Yeah, there's a common misconception, particularly among conservatives, among our detractors, that the Military Religious Freedom Foundation is an atheist organization. That is completely verifiably untrue. You know, the majority of our clients are Christians. The majority of our volunteers, our board of advisors, they're religious people. And in this case, you know, it's dealing with, you know, a religious person who's being discriminated against by Christian superiors. I personally am an atheist, and there are a few others that work with us that are, but I don't believe that someone should be discriminated against for having any religious belief, whether it's atheism or, you know, in this case, Hindu, or just not being the right type of Christian, which is, believe it or not, the most common issue that we have to deal with is people having their superiors say, we need to pray this way, you need to come to this type of church, problems like that.
Yeah. So what is the MRFF watching currently in terms of going on with cadets and military academies and sort of the, you know, next generation in the military?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just wondering what the organization is doing in terms of military cadets or military academies, if you have any sort of projects going in that sort of, in that realm.
I don't personally have any cases that I'm dealing with right now that are, you know, in any of the academies. I know that we just recently, Mikey just filed a lawsuit against the Air Force Academy for refusing to comply with FOIA regulations. And refusing to release data, information surrounding his time there, his children's time there, and some of the problems they've had in the past. But
is that a common problem?
As far as current cases, what's that?
Is that a common problem? They won't release information asked for?
I don't know the specifics of that case. It's something that I haven't been dealing with. But Mikey has had a long relationship with the Air Force Academy, obviously as a graduate, but you know also with you know the whole reason that he started the foundation was from the Air Force Academy allowing discrimination to occur against his children while they were there. It was around the release of The Passion of the Christ. The Air Force Academy was actively promoting it and in such a manner that ended up, you know, debasing non-Christian students.
That's terrible. It just also, it's not a very good movie.
No, definitely not. It's,
One thing that came to light after an AP article really came out was that there was a vendor on a post in Colorado who was selling this anti-Islamic T-shirt at a kiosk. Can you tell us how MRFF sort of got involved there and advocated for some of our current service members?
Yeah, we received an email from somebody stationed at that unit, and it didn't take very long to get it resolved. It was just, you know, sharing the information with the superiors to relevant authorities that were at that installation, and you know they did the right thing pretty quickly. The problem with that T-shirt, and it should be pretty obvious, is that it's specifically going, you know, presenting Islam in a very negative light, and it's, you know, of course it's common in this country right now. We have a lot of Islamophobia going around, but the message on that shirt in particular was, you know, look, here's the Statue of Liberty dressed up, you know, in Islamic attire with the crescent and star, you know, and superimposed above it. Who wants this? Nobody wants that. And that's true. I don't want that. Nobody at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation would support theocracy of any kind. But for AFES, which is contracted with the military to publicly promote, you know, a message that denigrates one particular religion is not just. They could have made a T-shirt with the Statue of Liberty holding a cross in the Bible, and I wouldn't want that either. It doesn't matter what religion is, you know, taking over the country. Nobody wants some people do want theocracy. No sound-minded person wants theocracy from any religion in the United States.
It's a common theme both within the military and without, that the idea of, you know, the government should represent my religion, and that's religious freedom, but it shouldn't represent anyone else's religion. That's, you know, infringing on freedom of religion. It's
kind of mind-boggling in that respect.
Yeah,
always.
Go ahead, Blake.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I stay in touch with a lot of folks that are in the military, you know, former classmates of mine, and just recently I was having a conversation with one, and he made the comment, well, I do believe that America is a Christian nation, and you know, this is someone who's now an officer in the U.S. Army, and I was like, okay, well, let's play that out. What do you mean by it's a Christian nation? Do you mean that I don't have the same rights as you? And he said, well, no, no, no. And I said, well, do you mean that we have laws that are based on Christianity? He said, yes. Okay, which ones? And he wasn't able to furnish any evidence whatsoever, but you know, it's a little frustrating for sure to be able to see people who are active in the military saying, it is a Christian nation, I'm a leader in the military, and I believe that 100%. But yeah, you know, if you call them out and, you know, take that conversation to its end, very few of them are going to say, well, we actually should discriminate.
Right.
You know, on that term of religious freedom, it's increasingly being used as sort of a rallying point for fervent believers to, well, abdicate responsibilities as government employees. We saw how Kim Davis worked out in that respect. Would Military Religious Freedom Foundation consider taking up the cause of a client who wished to practice their religious beliefs when those beliefs came into conflict with their military responsibilities?
No, no, absolutely not. In the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, you know, we believe that once you're in the military, your first priority is your service, your duty to your country. If somebody's beliefs are in conflict with performing their duty, then they're breaking down mission readiness. The commitment of any soldier, airman, marine, to the Constitution first, the country first, and then their religion. If they can't perform their duties, then it's not the military's responsibility to make special exceptions. Obviously, with Kim Davis not in the military, but you can see how being a public servant, you have a mission to accomplish first. Religion comes next. Imagine a fighter pilot who, their religion didn't allow them to fly planes on Saturday. Well, they're not going to be able to perform their duty. They should abdicate that position, and somebody else should take their place.
So how do you feel about sort of this co-opting of the term religious freedom in that respect?
Personally, I think it's silly. It's obviously not genuine. You can't claim that you're not free unless you're able to impose your religious beliefs on others. That's not the way freedom works. You're free to practice it in your own time, but anybody who's in the military and says, well, and the most common that we hear is, well, I'm Christian and I believe it's part of my religious freedom to evangelize to everyone every time I meet them, under any circumstances, whether it's on duty, off duty, in the execution of my formal duties or not. And that's absurd. It's not a genuine argument, I don't believe.
Yeah. And well, what about, do you know where the MRFF stands on the more sort of ceremonial language that's been used, the In God We Trust and the God Bless America type thing?
It depends on where it is. We would prefer that there wouldn't be any prayers or any invocations, in military ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is just by saying, let's all pray to God, there's a common argument that ceremonial deism is, it's not discriminatory because it doesn't support one religious belief over another, but that's necessarily false. It's just a prayer to God in general. That's an endorsement of theology over atheism. That's also an endorsement of monotheistic religion over polytheistic religion. And 9 times out of 10, they say he or Heavenly Father. So then again, you're endorsing patriarchal religions as opposed to matriarchal religions. So anytime that you invoke ceremonial deism, it can't be secular. I'm sure that you probably saw a few weeks ago, there was a story came out of Marine Corps Base Hawaii, where there is a large sign posted near one of the gates, which says, God bless the military, their families, and the civilians who work with them. The commander there said, well, this is a secular sign. It's not promoting religion. To that, we say, no, that's absolutely not true. It is promoting religion. It is promoting God. It's promoting an intervening monotheistic religion as opposed to other beliefs.
Mm-hmm. So we did follow that case, and I was curious. I know there was a suggestion of putting other signs representing other religions next to that. How has that fallen out? Like, have you heard anything back?
Yes, we have, actually. The response from Colonel Clean there was that he's not going to make any modifications to the sign.
Big
surprise. That he's definitely not going to take the sign down. Yeah, no surprises there. Unfortunately, our hands are tied. In cases like that, until we have a client that's willing to put themselves out there, file a complaint within the chain of command, or do something on the ground. Until we have a client that's actually at that unit that's willing to put their name out there, even through their chain of command, through the proper channels, eventually their identity is going to be known. And that's something that's very difficult for a lot of people in the military because they do value their career. Once they stand up, instead of being the leader who understands their civic duties, they become the troublemaker, the malcontent, and it can negatively affect their ability to get promoted, get the assignments that they want, things like that.
Yeah.
When we see all the God Bless America and In God We Trust, and it just becomes so patent that it is of one particular religious bent when you see it, whether it's in the military, whether it's in the courthouse, whether it's in a schoolhouse.
Police cars.
Yeah. So, I would love to see that kind of ceremonial deism or purported ceremonial deism reexamined. You know, when you were in the Air Force Academy, one of the things that you had written scathingly about was the encroachment of evangelical Christian religion in the academies. Did you see those kinds of God Bless America or In God We Trust? And sort of what was it like for you?
Well, I was not at the Air Force Academy. I was at West Point, which is the Army.
Excuse me. Yes, of course. West Point.
Academy. That's all right. So I did, you know, the writing was on the wall. Every time that we had any large dinner, there was an invocation and a benediction. There was always, you know, the prayer to our Heavenly Father, whoever that happens to be. Obviously, you know, it was a secular invocation to some God in heaven above that was intervening. I was very frustrated by that, of course. There was a lot of access, I guess, for evangelicals to the cadets from the very beginning during cadet basic training. Cadets were given the opportunity to go to something called chaplain's time, which is it's throughout, you know, regular basic training and cadet basic training as well, where, you know, once a week or so you'll have an opportunity to go to church, go to mass or, you know, temple, synagogue, whatever it's going to be. But if you're not religious, those opportunities weren't there for you. So even the non-religious cadets would participate. Ultimately, I think it was my second or third year there, the Secular Student Alliance at West Point, we were able to get something, a program there started called Non-Theist Chaplain's Time. So that opportunity was available to non-religious people as well. But it did take a great deal of work to get that going. A few other things that we had going on there, there were Bibles that were given to cadets. And it was an opt-out as opposed to opt-in handout. So the way that it worked is we had a formation during cadet basic training that said, if you don't want a Bible, fall out, go to the rear. Everybody else, stay here. And you can see how that would be a situation where you have to out yourself as non-religious or non-Christian right there at the beginning of your time at West Point.
Did they offer any other religious texts? Did they offer Qurans or Bhagavad Gitas or?
No. It was just Bibles. And actually, I still got mine. And it was pretty nice. It was leather bound. They got my name printed there and the West Point emblem right on the front as well.
Nice.
It's going to be a little collector's item for once all of these issues get resolved. You know, in the studio with us also today is Paul Mops. He's been on the show with us before, and he's a Vietnam veteran. You know, Paul, when you were in your early military career, did you experience this sort of thing?
Early on in my career, I did not. I saw some as I progressed, but religion in the military wasn't a real big thing when I was in. I've been retired for like 30 years, so
yeah.
But it the only problems we had would be in formations where prayer would be being said, and then you could see the those of us that were non-believers would be looking around and smiling at somebody else across the way saying, this is crazy. But essentially, no, there wasn't a real lot of religious anything going on that I know of.
You know, and
that I remember.
And it's incredible that as we look at research, further sociological research that shows that the United States is becoming less religious, there's less investment in going to church every day, there's less explicit God belief, fewer people associated with a specific religion, and we see increase in religious talk and religious literature and religious orientation within our armed forces. So that kind of contrast is a very interesting phenomenon that looks to be going on right now.
Yes, I see an... the military hospital that I use, the guidebooks or guidepost religious books are on every single waiting room, and they come by the chaplain's office. They're mailed to him, and at one point we got them to keep them in the chapel, and now I see they're all back out again. Every time I go, I see five or six of them on each and every waiting room.
It's really, really kind it's of an crazy. Incredible juxtaposition there. So, Blake, you know, if people wanted to keep following up with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, where can listeners go to follow up on your activities?
You can find us on Facebook, follow our Facebook page, or you can go to our regular website, mrss.org, and there we have regular posts almost daily about, you know, whatever's been going on, our new developments, new cases.
Well, Blake, thank you so much for joining us in advance of this Veterans Day. Blake Page has continued to contribute to the secular movement after his very public resignation from West Point in protest of religious encroachment into the military. He has been with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Thank you so much. When we come back, you'll hear more from me, from Dave, from Paul, maybe about some more military stories, maybe about some, I don't know, other fun news or some emails. You are listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC. We'll see you in a minute.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv. Or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm Becky Friedman, and with me still in the studio is Dave Brulette, and we're welcoming into studio Jeremy Whitman. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. And if you would like to call in, our number is 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We got some heavy news that I think bears discussion. What do you guys think? You up for it?
Yeah.
All right. So a fifth person has been killed in a machete attack in Bangladesh this year. Publisher Faisal Arifin Deepan was attacked in his office and killed. Deepan, unlike the other victims, was not an atheist, but rather believed in the free exchange of ideas. Among the works he was publishing were the writings of atheist blogger Avjit Roy, who was also killed earlier this year. A similar attack was carried out simultaneously at another publishing company, injuring three, including two secular writers. A Bangladeshi affiliate of Al-Qaeda claimed responsibility for the attacks, and a state official said that the attack was an isolated incident and not necessarily related to the other attacks.
Oh, that's
cowardly diplomatic of him.
Cowardly diplomatic.
Yeah. It just tells you how much justice you can expect in the future from the Bangladesh government about these issues. Like, they clearly are already finding ways to say we don't have to actually investigate this. We don't actually have to do anything about this because it's just a bunch of atheists who are getting killed.
Now, do you think that these are just a bunch of atheists that are getting killed? We don't have to do anything? Or do you think that this is I don't know Bangladesh politics and sort of the government system, but could it be an issue of this government has its hands tied by extremist killers, basically, at this point, wanting to silence a blasphemous atheist voice?
Well, the bullying tactics of fundamentalist Islam terrorist organizations do to some extent work. I mean, we know that it's changed the tone in when they murdered the Danish cartoonists and stuff, where they're making horrible arguments. Well, that's offensive to them, so it's somewhat we can understand. It's like, no, it can be offensive to them. A strongly worded letter would be more appropriate than if you use violence to fight an argument of thought. You've lost the argument,
right?
In my opinion. But yeah, I think it might be out of fear of more attacks.
Yeah, and I also think it's worth mentioning in the story that Dupont was not an atheist. He was just a publisher, and he wasn't even like a particularly politically active publisher. Like, if you look at the things that his company made, like they were novels, short stories, essays, poetry, travelogues, he worked in all sorts of genres, and Avijit Roy's work was just one of them, and he was still killed for that.
So this is no Charlie Hebdo, where you're an intentionally provocative publishing house.
No, he's just a guy who was taking anyone's ideas and thought, you know, ideas are worth printing.
And regardless, even if it was a Charlie Hebdo in France, I think most of us are against the wholesale slaughter of even provocative publishers at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's wrong to murder people who don't agree with you. I'm going to take a stand on that.
Well, you're taking more of a stand than the Bangladeshi government, Jeremy.
Well, they don't read my Facebook feed. I have a hard time getting almost any political idea across, it seems like.
So, you know, what can we expect at this point? I mean, we have Avijit Roy's spouse that has been, I believe, granted residency or asylum in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
She's an advocate. Maybe not. Maybe she is elsewhere, but she has been an advocate and a speaker in different places. I mean, what are we to expect now? I mean,
I think we need to get these people out of Bangladesh. I think we can just expect more murders. Like, I don't see the government there trying to do anything to really put a stop to it. They may, you know, put somebody in prison for a while just to pay lip service to the idea of justice. But I don't think there is any concern on the government to protect these people's lives. I think we need to get them out.
I think when you have something incredibly gruesome, I mean, the fact is that you have people that are... it's bad enough when someone is murdered and gunned down with a spray of bullets. These are people that are being gruesomely dismembered with machetes, with large knives. And what kind of sort of statement does that give to the people of Bangladesh or the people in other places?
The whole idea that you can't strongly condemn a person for taking another person's life at the edge of a machete, violently and personally, for trusting the rest of human population to take ideas in and understand them for themselves and maybe compare and contrast them. The idea that someone's belief system could in some way make it so that you can't speak out against them is insane to me. Oh, that's what they believe, that you should be able to hack someone up for trusting other people to be able to take in information from all sides. That's crazy. So I don't know if a change of power in Bangladesh is enough, as opposed to like a sea change in the way we see human rights.
Yeah.
I think at this point, either would be probably welcome.
Yeah.
I'll go for both. I'll go, how do I vote? Which state is Bangladesh? Is it in the south?
Oh, dear.
I'll change my residency.
I'll tell you what is in the south, and that is Texas. We're ready for something a little bit more local?
Yeah.
So the Texas Supreme Court is set to hear a case about whether or not the parents in general are obligated to meet educational standards with homeschooled kids. The case is being brought by the McIntyre family, who began homeschooling their 9 children over a decade ago. Texas state law doesn't require homeschool parents to register with any state educational agencies. A concerned uncle of the children reported that he never saw any of them reading, working with computers, or appearing to be educated at all, and reported overhearing one child say that they didn't need to learn because they were going to be raptured. When the El Paso School District asked for proof that the kids were being taught, the parents refused and then sued the state. Lower courts have all ruled against the family thus far.
They, so, sued the state for asking for proof.
So out of curiosity, there's no chance that the uncle was misunderstanding the kids were just fans of Blondie?
I don't know that someone who is homeschooled in a very religious environment is even permitted to access the music of the great Blondie. We are talking the musician here, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Bubblegum pop singer from, okay. All yeah. right.
Right. First rap song, Rapture, Man from Mars. Yeah. Uh-huh. It wasn't that great.
So, Jeremy, you grew up in a fundamentalist Christian family, and initially you didn't have homeschooling, but you did have a very religious-oriented schooling that taught some very strange things about the secular world and secular studies.
Yeah, I grew up in a three-fifths of a cult, I guess you would say, a fundamentalist Christian school, which went out of its way to make sure that everything they taught was connected to the Bible in some way. So history was based on the Bible as a historical book. And things like that. But also I cannot relate to these children because despite, you know, science being completely wrong, mostly we just burned Land Before Time DVDs in science class. But we were taught that we don't know when the rapture's coming. Maybe don't run up your credit cards and not learn about compound interest.
So in this case, this isn't even a Christian affiliated school. This is homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
And
basically my school was homeschool. There were almost no accredited teachers in my school, and my dad was the principal of it. Oh. So it was a trailer court with a bad education.
Okay. Well, do you think that, you would have had cause or the state would have had cause to intervene and say, no, this child is not receiving a proper education?
Yeah, absolutely. The same way I think the state has cause to intervene and say, if you're a Jehovah's Witness and your kid needs human blood, you're going to have to forego that belief until the kid's old enough to accept that belief for himself, as opposed to dying on a hospital bed.
So
it seems to be covered by the same piece of logic there to me.
That basically education is the right of a child to receive
yes.
an education. So, you know, the implications of where this is going, if the higher courts say, no, actually, the state has no interest in intervening, That's some pretty scary possibilities for me. All the courts thus far have ruled against the family saying, no, please provide evidence that you're educating your kid.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough precedent to go through. It's, you know, basically that would be the court settling the argument that the state doesn't have a right to make kids get educated.
Like,
wouldn't that be?
Personally believe it's probably going to go the other way. Texas does care very much about its children, like any human being. And the entity that is Texas does care about children quite a bit and has had a few run-ins with religious extremist groups that do not educate children. They had the tragedy in Waco, and also the FLDS, Polygamous Mormon Breakaway Group, had set up a camp and still has a camp down in Texas that's come under a lot of scrutiny and has changed laws based on what the FLDS was doing down there. So not only do I think that Texas probably will make the right move on this and say, no, you need to prove to us that this child can do long division by X number of years and so on and such, I believe it might have greater ramifications for other religious groups like the Amish, who only educate their children to about an eighth grade level for fear of them being too educated before yanking them out of school, which is a roundabout form of child abuse to me, to ill-equip a person to function in the society he is born into and will have to pay taxes into, or he or she. So hopefully Texas will make the right move on this. I can't imagine them not. It's rare to hear me say nice things about Texas.
I was going
to
say,
go ahead.
I have trouble having any confidence in the state of Texas and its legal system, honestly.
It's a tough thing right now. If their laws currently don't require anyone homeschooling their kids to submit that, it would, you know, possibly say this is out of compliance. The court might say this is out of compliance with our obligations to children, and then remand it to the legislature to try and create a law that says, no, you got to file your paperwork about how you're educating your kid, you know, minimum basic education.
I think it's a big oversight on their part that there's not a law. And I think that most of Texas will be shocked to find out that there's not a law that says homeschool children need to meet certain guidelines and you need to be able as a parent to prove that you're meeting these guidelines. I think everyone in Texas would be pretty much terrified of that idea.
I'm not sure that's necessarily true, because the homeschool lobby is actually a very powerful lobby, and basically their entire stance is that the state doesn't have a right to tell us what we need to teach our kids, and if we decide nothing, that's our right. And I can totally see that lobby having a lot of sway with sort of the Republican government in Texas.
Or just anyone, motivated by their wish to protect their children, to supposedly protect their children from any kind of secular knowledge. We've had families from Germany wish to apply for asylum in the U.S. simply for their right to be able to homeschool their kids and not have to file those things. Mm-hmm. You know, as a teacher, as a public school teacher, one of the things that's most astounding to me here is I meet families who have immigrated from countries where they're either refugee families and have had interrupted schooling. I've met and work with children that have had no schooling foundation whatsoever. One of our largest immigrant populations in the U.S. is from Mexico, where free and compulsory education is only available up through grade 6. I have students right now who are taking their advanced placement international baccalaureate college level classes, and their parents are incredibly proud because their parents stopped education at age 11.
Wow.
And to say, look, in Texas, you have a large percentage of our population who have Mexican heritage, who have looked at coming to the U.S. as a way to provide educational opportunity for their children. And you have families in El Paso, Texas that are saying, no, I want to go against everything that people seek to come to the U.S. to do. Hmm. is kind of baffling to me and saddening. So, Jeremy, I'm hopeful that your thinking is correct.
I am stunned that I am not only defending Texas, but the most optimistic person at this table. This is an Ask an Atheist first.
I do believe you're right.
And I think there's a little bit more to it than I'm just the homeschool lobby who's never been to a dance, who doesn't know how to talk to a girl, being involved. And that is that southern states and states that have a good old boy reputation do not want to be thought of in that way. And I'm sure are going to be horrified at the idea also. So this is, I think we're at the beginning of a very big discussion that's going to go on in Texas. And if you want to hear from proud Texans, post something that's an embarrassing story from Texas on Reddit or some other social media site, and you will hear a Dixie Chick sort of response like, this is very embarrassing to me as a resident of Texans. Are proud people, and they are not all hillbillies, this family excluded, obviously.
So
one of the pieces of information that I didn't quite get in the story is that the oldest daughter from this family actually ran away and sued her parents, I believe, for not educating her. And when she went into high school at age 17, they put her in ninth grade because they didn't think she could handle any higher level classes.
We're seeing that more and more, where children who leave their families as adults realize the education that they never got. We've met people in the Seattle area. We've met and heard from people in all areas of the country. And I think that, you know, if we're really to look at how we want to educate our children, we as a community, as free thinkers, need to scrutinize what we do to help serve and educate people who come out of that. Because after you turn 18, you don't really get a lot of attention for why do you have all of these gaps in your education? Why don't you understand what DNA is? Why do you have these skeptical, fearful, sort of illogical conclusions? And even people that are skeptics and are atheists and are coming away from their religion, it would be very hard to reveal those kinds of gaps in your education, especially if you're sort of running in circles with people who that value science and value skepticism.
I certainly do not go into a job interview and tell them that, yes, I went to a private school, but it was a private school that didn't believe in science. I would never do
yes,
that.
Yes, let me work in your engineering department, in your electrical department, and I didn't learn any science in high school.
I do think that as a society, we're probably right now hearing the beginning of the death rattle of the idea of your children as your religious property, as we're getting a lot of cases that say, no, I don't care what you believe, you have to provide them with a standard level of medical care. Even though you might be a Jehovah's Witness or some other religion, a Christian Scientist that says don't take your kid to a hospital, if you can prevent that child's death, you are legally obligated to. And I think that language is going to, maybe not this week, maybe not this year, extend to the idea of education also.
I'm hoping so. You know, we got time for one more really fun one that's a little bit aligned with this, and that is disgraced televangelist Jim Baker. He's now selling buckets of Bibles on his website. Baker's best known for going to prison for fraud and getting divorced for a sex scandal.
Buckets of Bibles?
Well, I guess now he has decided that his revival from the 80s, from the heyday of his time, is to sell buckets of Bibles. So he's returned to televangelism as well as selling survivalist supplies, such as food by the bucket. The newest product is a bucket with 24 Bibles for $50. And according to his website, the Bibles are for spreading the gospel during the end times. He encourages the adoption of the term revivalists, not survivalists, for those who purchase his product. What do you guys think of this?
Let's combine those two products. It should be a bucket of food with Bibles at the bottom, like a Cracker Jack box, and you eat your way to your Bibles.
I just want to let that term hang in the air for just a little bit longer. Buckets of Bibles.
Buckets of Bibles. Buckets and buckets of Bibles.
I want to see some imagery of this. This is confusing to me. It's not like Coronas where they fit neatly into a bucket. These are square book round hole.
Square book round bucket. Yeah. And Jim Baker is really making a killing on this whole survivalist rapture sort of market, and he's selling, like, you know, buckets of cornmeal that cost $2,500.
So the markup is way...
Markup is incredible. Apparently you can get everything he sells at Costco for like half the price.
Well, maybe that's what that homeschool family of nine kids is doing right now.
Has a disgraced televangelist ever come back and just become a great guy? Or are they just always like, I've had 30 years in prison to think about the weirdest, most horrible way to bilk my followers?
We
just
may
transparently
never,
evil.
We may never find out. This has been Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I've been pleased to be your co-host, Becky Friedman, and my co-hosts are Dave and Jeremy. Thanks to Paul Mops and Blake Page for being on today. Music by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Go to askanatheist.tv to toss us your questions or contributions. Tweet us at askanatheistwa and leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Thank you to our veterans. See you guys next week.
Buckets of Bibles.